Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the personnel department here at Car Talk Plaza. Wow.
I remember when we used to do the show, when we were just neophytes at this. Now that we're consummate
professionals. Tadpoles, so to speak.
Well, I remember people used to admonish us. This was broadcasting and you couldn't narrowcast.
Right.
We didn't know what that meant. No. I still really don't.
Hardly.
But it meant like you can't say hello to your brother-in-law. Right. Hi, Eugene. How you doing?
Right.
You can't do that. But this is a narrow casting thing. I'll read you the news release here. Bosses of a publishing firm are trying to work out why no one noticed that one of their employees had been sitting dead at his desk for 5 days before anyone asked if he was feeling okay, which he wasn't.
Well, he may have been. You don't know.
Judge Turkelbaum, 51, who had been employed as a proofreader at a New York firm for 30 years, had a heart attack in the open plan office he shared with 23 other workers. He quietly passed away on Monday, but nobody noticed until Saturday morning when an office cleaner asked why he was still working during the weekend, and he didn't answer, I guess. Mm. His boss said George was always the first guy in the morning and the last to leave at night, so no one found it unusual that he was in the same position all that time and didn't say anything. He was always absorbed in his work and kept pretty much to himself. He had been deaf for 5 days. He had a coronary and, ironically, had been proofreading manuscripts of medical textbooks.
And
the reason I say it's narrowcasting, we have a big staff here.
We do.
As you know. I mean, we got Kay Sara, we got Nikolai Putin, we got all those guys. And they ain't doing much.
Most of them could be dead. And
most of them could be dead as we speak.
We wouldn't
and
know
nobody
it.
Would notice it.
But of our immediate staff, like Dougie and Dave and Doug the Yak Boy, I mean, we were very concerned after reading this, and we went around to each of them, and we lifted their heads off the desk. We found out that they were just sleeping.
Are you okay?
Is anything all right?
They all said, define okay. So, if someone around your office hasn't been saying much lately and hasn't been to the water cooler, you ought to check, I guess, is the moral of this little story.
Indeed.
As did we, and we found that everyone was as okay as they could be.
We're still alive and kicking. Anyway, if you're not dead yet and you have a question about your car or anything else for that matter, give us a call at 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Jeff from Butler, Pennsylvania.
From where? Butler?
Butler.
PA.
Like
mm-hmm.
Like in Rhett Butler.
Right.
Is that the left part of PA or the right part?
That is the left part if you're looking at it from space.
Well, what if you're upside down?
What if you're upside down? Is it like near right Pittsburgh part. Or Philadelphia?
It's near Pittsburgh.
Gotcha.
That's the left part. Okay, Jeff.
What's up?
I got an 86 Volkswagen Scirocco that has a temperature-dependent slipping clutch.
Hmm. Really?
It's really weird. If it's cold outside, it works great. But if it's warm out, the clutch slips in pretty much all the gears, and it drives me crazy. Also, if it's cold out and I've been driving for a couple hours, it starts to slip, but not as bad as it does on a warm day.
When you say slip, do you mean slip?
I mean slip.
Well, what does slip mean to you? Because, I mean, if it means something different, I can explain this, but if it means slip, I have no idea.
Hmm. Okay, if I'm driving down the road and say I want to go past somebody, I floor it. The tach jumps up a couple thousand RPMs, and the speedometer doesn't move at all.
I was afraid you were going to say that.
I let off the gas, and it goes right back down where it's...
You know what that's called?
No, what's that
slipping. Clutch slippage.
So it slips hot, but doesn't slip cold.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Okay, I'll let my brother ask the penetrating questions.
This is a Scirocco, huh? Is it black like all of them?
No.
It's not.
This is Arctic Blue.
Arctic Blue. Let me write that down. Arctic Blue. And it has a million miles on it, right?
It's got 136,000 on it.
And, of course, you've never changed the clutch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I changed it at about 96,000 miles.
Oh.
Did you ever change the clutch cable?
I did replace the clutch and the cable.
Did you do them yourself?
Yes, I did.
Have you ever replaced the clutch before?
No, this is my first attempt.
Oh, so you wouldn't know if this clutch looked weird.
It looked weird to me. It's the only one I ever saw.
And what's the adjustment on the clutch at the moment?
It's a manual adjustment, and I've got it with about an inch of free play.
Man, Jeff, you are giving us the worst possible answers.
And you don't feel any difference in the pedal.
No, I can't feel any difference.
And the engagement point is the same.
The engagement point is right about the same.
All right. Who paid you to make this call?
Was it Berman?
Well, the only thing then that I can imagine.
You can imagine something?
Not really, but we'll never get rid of him if we don't give him an answer. He sounds like the persistent type. Is that somehow oil is getting onto the clutch as you drive it.
That's what one of the Volkswagen people said.
Ooh, that's good.
They said, you probably oiled the clutch. I said, well, how in the world did I get oil on the clutch?
Well, the oil can come from two sources. It can come out the crankshaft.
Okay,
out the rear crankshaft seal. Or better than that, it can come right out of the main shaft of the transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Does this thing have that weird throat bearing where a rod comes out of the middle of the transmission shaft?
Yes, it does.
The front of that rod rides on a little rubber seal, and it could be that oil.
Temperature's got to come into it. Yeah. I thought temperature was a red herring.
No, as the fluid warms up and gets less viscous.
Exactly.
It can work its way past that seal. Which okay, Jeff, that's good. See you later, man.
Woo!
But that, I mean, I think that's it. You're going to have to yank the transmission, and you're going to find out that little seal, which cost about 80 cents,
mm-hmm.
which you should have replaced when you did the clutch, but
yeah,
you didn't.
Yeah. That's one of the rules of clutchness, that when you do the clutch, do every conceivable thing that is even vaguely related to the clutch or anything you can see that you couldn't see before, replace it. You know, like the
air freshener.
Crankshaft.
But I think that's it.
Okay.
Good luck.
Okay, thanks a lot.
See you, Jeff.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, poor guy. So, all right. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Alexandra from Des Moines, Iowa.
Aren't you precise?
Alexandra. Do they call you Alex?
My friends do, yes.
May we call you Alex?
You may.
Okay, just,
no, we're
just
not
checking.
Our friends.
Well, yeah, you're about to be.
Okay.
I drive a 1990 Honda Civic hatchback, and I have this intermittent but extremely annoying problem of the fact that the car will turn over, but it won't catch.
So you get into the car.
Right.
And you turn the key, and it goes wah, 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 but it doesn't start.
Exactly. But this is an intermittent problem, and we've done... With the help of my boyfriend, Dennis, I've done a little work. We have replaced the fuel filter. We know that the battery's okay. The battery connections are clean and shiny.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's not the starter motor, and it's not any of the starter wires.
We know that, too.
Yeah, or the sunroof.
Or the radiator cap. We know all that.
Okay.
Does it happen when it does what it does, which you say doesn't happen all the time?
Correct.
Is it weather-related?
Well, I actually thought so. I was in Virginia. It started this summer, and I was in Virginia this summer where, you know, it's extremely hot and humid.
Yeah, that's where it happens.
And it started in July.
Wait. You mean the problem started in July, not the car?
The car has been starting wonderfully for 11 years, yes. The problem started in July. In July, and I thought that maybe I just picked the wrong place to park because the 2 days that it first happened, I parked in exactly the same spot.
In the sun.
Exactly, in the sun. It was 98 degrees.
There you go.
Humidity was high.
Yes, you needn't say another word, my child.
Okay.
Baba Ganoush is here to help
okay.
you.
Okay.
Baba Ganoush.
What's wrong with your Civic, and I suspect now that the fall weather is upon us that it's probably starting with a little more reliability, although maybe not.
Actually not. The other day I went out there, and I couldn't get it started.
Okay. It's only because the part that's bad has gotten really bad. You need to replace the fuel pump relay. It's located under the dashboard.
Fuel pump relay.
Yeah, and what happens, and we've replaced dozens of these in Hondas, is in the hot weather, and especially if the car is parked in the sun,
mm-hmm.
the relay doesn't close. And if it doesn't close, the fuel pump doesn't get electricity, and the car won't start.
Oh.
So you turn the key, and it does everything else, and it's getting spark, it's turning over, but it's not getting a supply of fuel. And then if you open the windows and let it cool off, or if it's a cloudy day, you'll turn the key, and boom, it'll fire right up.
Wow.
So in its initial stages, it's very weather-related. As it gets worse and worse... It can just be every day. and then eventually the car. So you need to go to the Honda dealer,
okay,
if you're so inclined, and buy a new fuel pump relay.
And the good part about all of this is that it's cheap and it's easy to get to.
Yeah, it's under, you'll with the new part in your hand, you'll stick your head up under the dashboard with a flashlight in one hand.
And you say, where's the thing that looks like this?
And when you find, and the best part is, it'll have numbers on it that match the numbers of the original one.
Okay.
So you'll say, aha, that's it. And it'll be obvious. The plug will be the same and whatever.
Okay.
And if you replace that, your problem will be fixed.
Oh, that's wonderful. Is this also why my horn doesn't work?
Of course.
That quick too?
Of course
it is. Yeah. And that pimple you got on your neck, it's that too.
You're pressing your luck. See you, Alex.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Peggy, and I live in Johnson City, New York.
Hi, Peggy. How are you?
Okay.
Johnson City.
Where's that?
Where's Johnson City?
Around, you know, where Binghamton is.
We do?
Oh, yeah.
We're right in the Binghamton area.
Right in the Binghamton area. I have been to Binghamton, actually.
Let me
put it in the right context. I was happy to go to Binghamton because I had been in Unadilla.
Oh.
And if you think Binghamton is bad, there ain't much going on in Unadilla. So we were thrilled to go to Binghamton. I think we went to find a laundromat or something. I don't know. Anyway, did we take you to Binghamton the time the dog bit you?
That little bitch. You mean little princess?
Yes. Was that? Did we take you to the Binghamton Hospital?
No, you didn't. Now, first, let me explain. This dog hated everybody.
No, this dog hated you. The dog never bit anyone but you. You were the owner. The dog singled you out.
No, but I was being nice to her.
No, you weren't.
We had just bought a pizza. I'm standing there with a piece of pizza in my hand, and she's sitting there going, well, what about me? Me? Everyone else is disregarding the little...
beast.
Beast. That's it. That's it. The other B word. And I generously reached down with my hand with my pizza.
And I witnessed the whole thing. Let her sniff it. You pulled it
I
away.
I did like
You let her
hell.
Sniff it. You
I
pulled it away.
I did not.
After the third time, she says, I'm biting this old geezer, and I'm sending him to the hospital in Binghamton, which is 50 miles away.
No. I gave her the pizza, and she took the pizza and took my finger with it.
Some dogs will do that, especially if they hate you.
And I did not go to the Binghamton Hospital. You brought me to that stupid hospital in
Unadilla.
In Unadilla.
Oh, I remember.
That has no name. You know what the name of the hospital is? There's a big sign outside that says, The Hospital. Duh.
Well, better than saying the feed store.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And there weren't two hospitals, so...
No, it was a multi-purpose hospital.
Yeah, it's just the hospital.
We treat
generic hospital.
And four-legged mammals. They asked him how long it had been, how many hours it had been since he'd eaten, and Tommy went, Anyway, what's up, Peggy?
I have a 2004 Hyundai Elantra.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I've been told by a mechanic and my son that filling the tank all the way up so that the gas is out of the tank.
Yeah, overflowing the filler neck?
Yeah. Is not good.
That's true.
They are both correct.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, almost every manufacturer now, and you'll notice at gas stations, if you're lucky enough to find one where there's actually an attendant, they will put the nozzle in, you know, and set the thing. And when it goes off,
They're done.
They don't try to top off the tank to get an extra gallon or two in there because it can be detrimental to the emission system of the car.
Oh, really?
To try to top it off. Yeah.
Oh.
And the truth is, the best you're going to do is squeeze another gallon in, but especially if the weather goes from cool to hot, the gasoline's going to expand. It's going to try to escape the tank, which it can't, and then it's going to flood over into the evaporative canister, and that could do long-term damage to it. So you shouldn't
top off. Because the canister is supposed to simply take in vapors, but if you put in too much gasoline, it'll take in liquid gasoline as well, and that defeats the purpose of the whole thing.
I have to tell my son he's right.
Yeah, you got to tell your son he's right. And
how old is he? He's not like 11, is he?
No, he's 26.
All right. Well, you can tell him he's right. If he was 11, it would be a tough pill to swallow. But at 26, it's all right to say, geez, son, I've reconsidered.
I've reconsidered, and I think you're right about the gas.
Yeah, don't tell him you've spoken to us.
No.
Oh, he knows.
He knows.
Oh, he does.
All right. He's listening, huh?
He listens.
Oh, all right.
So well, I've been caught.
At least we didn't embarrass you, I don't think.
No. He will, but...
He will.
He will, right.
Well, I'm sure you'll be able to take it. Thanks for your call, Peggy.
Okay, thank you.
See
okay,
ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, look, it's time for our regular weekly routine.
Yeah, this is where you ask me if I remember last week's puzzle.
You got it, and you hem and haw and come up with some puzzle from a year and a half ago, and I say, no, you're dope, and then I give you a hint.
And then I still don't get it, and you give me the answer anyway?
Exactly. So the question is, why do I bother?
Yeah, just to humiliate me?
That's it. I knew there was a reason. Okay, here's your hint. The only time you'll ever buy a car is when it's on blank.
On sale.
No, on last legs. The puzzle was
that
about
is true.
The first and last legs of a road trip that you and I took. And I'll be back
it.
With the answer in just a minute. And even though bottle genies insist the first two wishes be used to make us disappear whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a jackhammer operator and miss grating noises when you get home.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. And this was, I guess I labeled it quasi-automotive and quasi-geographic.
But not folkloric at all.
Not yet.
No.
Anyway.
You might work that in now.
Last month, Tommy and I decided that we were going to take a trip up north to see the foliage.
Oh, this is fiction.
And our wives decided they couldn't stand the thought of being in the car with us, so we were on our own.
Oh, it's not fiction.
So we get in the car, and Tommy drives the first 40 miles. I drive the rest of the way. We arrive at our destination. We get out of the car, glance at the foliage, and Tommy says, okay, let's get a cappuccino. Let's get out of here. So we turn around and head home on the same road that we used to get there. Tommy drives the first leg of the trip, and I drive the last 50 miles home.
Hmm.
Anyway, when I get home, my wife says, how was the trip? And I say, I was with my brother. How good could it have been? And she says, well, who did the driving? And I explain exactly what I just said. On the way there, Tommy drove the first 40 miles, and I drove the rest. On the way back, Tommy drove the first leg of the trip, and I drove the last 50 miles. She said, yeah, but who did most of the driving? I said, well, you can figure it out. In fact, you can even figure out how much more of the driving was done by that person. Now, I didn't say how long we were gone, how far we went, whose car we took, who bought the gas, or any of those things.
Who bought lunch?
So the question was, who drove the most miles and how many more did that person drive? Well, you could make it complicated if you could say, well, gee, I don't have enough information. I don't know the distance. I don't know the speed. I don't know anything. But I always like to boil these problems down to what I call the limiting case.
Yeah.
And I said that you drove the first 40 miles and I drove the rest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then on the way back, you drove the first leg and I drove the last 50.
Right.
Well, you can make the distance anything you want, but let's make it 50 miles.
The whole distance.
The whole trip. So you drove the first 40.
Limit theory.
I drove the last 10.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
On the way home, you didn't drive at all.
No. You drove a whole 50 miles.
I drove 50 miles. How many miles did I drive? 60 miles. How many miles did you drive? 40. How many more miles did I drive? 20 miles.
So no matter what that distance is in between,
it's always 20 miles.
You will always drive 20 miles more.
I always get stuck doing the driving.
That's right.
I can't stand it.
That's all I can pay for the gas. Wow.
Do we have a winner?
Sure we have a winner. We
See,
always
when
have
you
a
think
winner.
You don't have enough info.
Yeah. Well, it's because you wish you had the info necessary to solve the problem simply, whereas you don't really, no one's asked you that, like how far did they go? So that's,
right. If they don't ask you.
If you don't give it, then you must not need it.
Sometimes. We'll see this week.
Especially if you're taking the SAT exams.
Who's our winner, man?
The winner is Linda Williams from Ann Arbor, Michigan. And for having her answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Linda gets a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which Linda can get one of our fine. You know, when something is really junk, that's when you use the adjective fine to describe it, don't you? Isn't it true?
Yeah.
Anyway, Linda, you can get one of our fine Car Talk collections on CD. That's a fine product, isn't it?
Oh, yes. The finest. Anyway, we'll have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of the show, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Right now, if you have a question about your car, the number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Jay from Santa Monica, California.
Is that the letter J or J as in jaywalker?
J as in jaywalker.
From Santa Monica.
From Santa Monica.
Jeez, how I love walking on the Santa Monica Pier.
I mean, yeah. It doesn't get much better than that, does it?
No, I don't think that it does.
I always expect to run into Jim Rockford.
Yeah, well, he lives further up.
Well, he lives in Malibu, yeah. So anyway, Jay, what's cooking?
Well, I have a Honda Civic Si 1986, and about a month ago, I decided that although I don't have much mechanical skill, that I could change the spark plugs and the rotor and the cap.
Yeah, that's within the average person's grasp.
Right. So I did that, and immediately...
It stopped running.
No, worse than that. The first thing that happened was that the engine began to rev at 2,000 RPMs at startup. Now, normally, this car idles at about 750. But all of a sudden, when I start the car up, the engine is revving at 2,000 RPMs, and maybe if I'm lucky, it drops down to 1,500. And my gas mileage went from 40 and 35 to 30 and 25.
Boy, what could you have done? When you replaced the distributor cap.
Yes.
Was it nice and easy to do that?
It was extremely easy. You didn't
mess around with the distributor itself? You didn't, like, unscrew anything that you shouldn't have, loosen something that you shouldn't have?
When I experienced this problem, of course, the first thing I did was take it into my mechanic to see if I had knocked a wire loose or something like that, and there doesn't seem to appear to be anything wrong with it in terms of those things.
So your mechanic looked at it?
Oh, of course, yeah, and he didn't have an answer for me.
Of course, he was miffed
that
you did your own work because he feels another customer slipping away.
A smaller and smaller boat.
Down to a dinghy. What were you messing around with? The thing was running perfectly all right. You already told us you were getting like 97 miles to the gallon, but no. You had to go change the plugs, the rotor, and the cap. Oh, it must have really needed them. It was only getting 97 miles to the gallon.
Well, it's
clear. Every day I go out to the car, I ask myself that same question. What was I doing messing around under the hood?
Well, that's what we were asking, too.
All right.
But when you say your guy looked at it, did he actually do anything like hook the timing light up, for example?
No, he took it back into the shop. I'm sure he was under the hood.
Oh, he wouldn't allow you in to see what he was doing?
Right. Oh, well, you know, I didn't feel a need to.
Yeah, yeah,
that.
No, but so he had it in the shop for some period of time.
Yeah, he had it back in there for 20 minutes, half an hour, something like that. He pulled the spark plugs to make sure that they were the right spark plugs.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the previous work that was done to it before you embarked on your adventure here?
The last thing that I had done to it was that about 3 months ago I had the radiator and...
I love it.
And the thermostat change.
I love it. I love it.
Okay.
It all fits.
Very good.
Yeah. You have...
You're going to go with that for plan A?
I was already going to go with it.
You were.
I was already going to say, Jay.
Good.
Did you have the water pump or something replaced recently?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Or some cooling system service done?
Yeah.
And what's wrong with this thing, I believe, is that it has a gas bubble.
A gas
that
bubble?
That it is airbound and that the coolant temp sensor is not immersed fully in coolant. And as such, will make the engine run as if it were cold and in the warm-up mode. And it'll inject more fuel in. It'll open the idle air control and make the engine run faster. It'll cut down on your mileage as such. So you need to have the system bled.
So bleed?
Bleed the cooling system.
The cooling system.
Yes, we call it coolant letting in the trade.
I mean, this is a wonderful answer also, I have to say. But I'm surprised that it would have taken 3 months.
Well, I think it was just bad luck and a message to you.
Keep your hands off the car.
Yeah. It may be, in fact, that he did bleed the thing correctly whenever he did this radiator and thermostat business. But you may have a leak. And if you have a leak, then it's possible when the coolant level drops down or has dropped down, because it's dropped down, you now have air in the system, and that is causing the problem. But I'm 99% sure that your problem is insufficient coolant.
Excellent.
I mean, you can tell if it's low just by opening the radiator cap when it's cold.
I wouldn't do anything,
and
Jay,
take a look.
If I were you. I stay away from it.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. What was I thinking?
Good luck.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Susan from Clinton, Mass.
Hi, Susan.
Clinton. Is that like out west?
West of Boston, yeah.
I remember one day we were sitting at the dining room table. It was a Sunday. And my brother-in-law asked Dad, how do you get to Clinton?
Clinton?
And the first thing Dad asked was, well, which way is your car facing? And then when he realized that he didn't know how to get to Clinton, nor it was, his next question to my brother-in-law was, what the hell do you want to go out there for?
Okay.
Anyway, but you're out there.
I know. Don't tell me anymore.
All right.
We won't. What's going on, Susan?
Well, I have a 99 Kia Sportage. And don't make fun of me because it's a Kia.
No. We like
Not
Kias.
At all.
And it's actually been really good. But for maybe the last, 6 months or so, when I start my car in the morning, and it's just really when it's cold and hasn't been running, I notice a sound kind of up in the front of the engine, and it does like a tick, 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 tick. And once the car is going and it's warm, it doesn't seem to do it, but I don't hang my head out the window and listen, but I don't really hear it.
Well, when you come to a stoplight or a stop sign, can you hear it then?
No, not really. And even if I'm idling, I don't really hear it.
So when you first started?
Yeah. For like the first 5 minutes.
Have you checked the oil recently?
My husband's very good about checking the oil.
Did he check the oil recently?
Yes. It's been recent, and the oil's been changed regularly.
And how many miles do you have on this thing?
104.
Oh, at 104, an engine is entitled to make any and all noises.
Great.
And while this one may not be anything particularly worrisome, I would have a professional check it out. It sounds to me like you have a lazy or a sticky hydraulic valve lifter.
Hydraulic valve lifter?
And it's often the case that when a lifter gets sticky or worn out, that until enough heat is generated by the, you know, the parts of the engine that create heat.
Uh-huh.
To make the oil a little bit less
viscous. Uh-huh. And to swell everything up, to make the camshaft a little fatter, to make this lifter that's gotten beaten down in 104,000 miles a little longer, you'll have some noises.
Okay.
But not to worry. Can you drown it out with the radio, Susan?
I frequently do, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is not a terrible thing. Especially if it goes away after a minute or so.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to affect the power of the drive.
No, it would slightly, but you wouldn't notice it.
Okay.
You can try adding one of the many products that are on the market that address just this issue.
Exactly.
and I can't remember any of them offhand. But if you but if you go to a you
how
know,
about mystery oil?
Mystery oil is one
mystery
of them.
Mystery oil always works.
Is that really a name, or are you just making that up?
No.
Susan, have you ever known us to make up anything?
No.
There is truly something called mystery oil.
Mystery oil.
And it's been around for decades.
And it claims to free up sticky lifters and frozen piston rings.
And it probably will fix it.
Okay.
And you can add it to anything. Transmissions, differentials, salads,
cakes,
engines, frostings. You know, so you might want to try that. But when you go to your parts store, you can go to like a Pep Boys or an Auto Palace, one of those places.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you can find these. There'll be a whole shelf of these things, and you can read all of their claims, and you may decide you want to try one a week or whatever, and you may find one that works.
Okay.
But you should, just to be on the safe side, take it to a professional to make sure it's nothing more serious than what we suggested.
Okay.
You know.
But you have to leave it overnight so he can hear it the first thing in the morning.
Right.
All right. Good luck, Susan.
Thank you very much.
And hope you escape from Clinton.
And try any one of those products. Some of them will work.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care, guys. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
888.
I wish my problems were as simple as that.
I know. Did your car have lifters even?
No. I don't even know.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Nissan from Chicago.
Nissan, like the car?
Nissan, just like the car.
No kidding. What do you drive?
I actually drive a 2005 Subaru Impreza WRX STI.
Now, look, we're accustomed to getting calls. Hi, this is Chrysler from Detroit. And we get those calls, or GM from Detroit. We know we're in trouble.
But Nissan from Chicago.
Yeah.
That's pretty
good. So how did you wind up with the name Nissan?
It's actually Assyrian, which is my ancestry.
And what does it mean?
It means April. And I was supposed to be born in April, so they named me Nissan.
Were you?
No, I was early.
Ah.
Yeah.
March?
February?
March 22nd. February.
What's the Assyrian word for March?
Actually, I don't know.
You don't know. We'll get on it.
Doesn't matter.
We'll expect an email. Anyway.
So what about this Impreza?
Well, there's nothing wrong with the Impreza. Actually, I have a dispute with my girlfriend.
Ah.
She drives a 2004 Honda Element with an automatic transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she was raised in Germany, and she's used to driving manuals.
Yeah.
So she came to this country, got the car, and now, I would say that I love my girlfriend very much.
He knows he's in trouble already.
Yeah.
I know, right? When she parks the car, when she comes to a complete stop to park the car, she pulls the car up to a complete stop, turns the ignition off, and then reaches for the shifter and shifts from drive into park.
Yeah.
Now, I think she's ruining something in her automatic transmission because I know how complicated those
are. Have you told her this yet?
Yes, and she thinks I'm crazy.
Well, you should have called us first.
Yeah.
Because now you're going to look like a jerk.
Oh, great.
Yeah, well.
I mean, did you ask her to explain why she does this?
She says because it doesn't matter.
Well, she's right.
She's absolutely right.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And in fact, it's recommended for a lot of people who park on an incline. You've probably had a situation or two in your life where you've parked an automatic transmission car on a steep hill and you've put it in park and then taken your foot off the foot brake and you notice that the car has rolled forward or backward, you know, quite a distance.
Right.
And then the next time you go to start it, it starts all right, but you can't easily get it out of gear because there's a lot of pressure on something called the parking pole, which is exactly the thing that keeps the transmission from rotating when the thing is in park.
Right.
Okay? And what they recommend you do in a situation like that is to stop the vehicle while it's still in drive, set the handbrake.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then put it in park.
And then put it in park, and then you can turn the key off, or turn the key off and put it in park.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't really make any. But she's not doing anything bad.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I was
pretty sure.
Oh, great. Okay, I'm in the doghouse. That'd
yeah,
okay.
you're in trouble. Okay. You should have called us first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in Flint, Michigan, where, you know, you're supposed to know a lot about cars.
You're supposed to know everything.
Yeah, and I don't know anything about cars.
Yeah, well, it's time to admit that.
Maybe you have to start developing some new expertise.
I teach economics, so maybe that'll be a good idea.
That'll be good.
Tell her how to spend your money. That'll go over well.
Yeah.
Good luck, Nissan.
Right. Thank you very much, Elman.
All right, bye-bye.
Have a good one.
Hey, as your concerned younger brother, I got to ask you, man, you look like you've been dragging lately, tired and worn out. You all right?
Me? I'm feeling great. I've been riding my bike to the office, bounding up the stairs two at a time, walking all over the city. I'm in my prime, man. I have never felt better. Why did you ask?
Great. And you got exactly a minute to run down to the corner and get coffee and two donuts.
I've been had.
We'll be back with the brand new puzzler in just a minute. Come on, get going. Time's wasted.
Hey, mister, are you having car trouble? What's your name? Where are you from? Did you see that little bug? Must be something in the radiator blown out.
And even though mathematicians try to figure out how 1 + 1 can equal 0 whenever we say it, this is NPR.
Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us. Pay
attention. Wake me up like that.
You're listening to Car Talk with us. Click and clack the Tappet Brothers. And we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new puzzler. Mm-hmm. This was submitted by Ross Tsukashima.
Yeah.
He says, a friend of mine used to work at a Ford assembly plant, and he told me the following story. A new model came out, and like anything, there were a few design bugs that needed to be worked out.
Mm-hmm.
I have to add parenthetically that this was a while ago.
Okay.
Amongst these problems was one really strange one. One out of every 6 cars delivered to a dealership would have a dead battery. The engineers at Ford were perplexed. They did circuit tests for short circuits. None were found. They did extensive lot testing on incoming batteries to see if one out of every 6 was a problem right from the manufacturer. And guess what?
No.
No problems.
Perfect.
They hired specialists and consultants, crystal ball readers and the like, experts on batteries and chemicals to try to pinpoint the problem. They could find none. For 3 months, the problem existed, and for 3 months, the problem stayed exactly the same. One out of every 6 cars had a dead battery upon arrival at the distributor.
Wow.
He says, my friend was a quality control engineer and decided to take action and take things into his own hands.
Yeah.
He walked the entire assembly plant talking to the workers as he went. He started out in components, wound up in the cafeteria, then went through chassis and electrical and followed the line all the way to final test. Without fail, each car would start up at the end and be driven away.
Mm-hmm.
There were no dead batteries at final test. He was stumped. He watched the cars being loaded for shipment and then turned around to talk to the guy in charge of final test. He asked him if there were ever any dead batteries at final test, and he said, no, never.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah. He then explained to the tester the situation and asked him if he could think of a reason why 1 out of 6 batteries were always dead on this particular model. The guy stared off into the distance. He pondered. He scratched his butt. And then he smiled, and he said he knew what the problem was.
Really?
And my friend later checked and confirmed that the guy in final test was absolutely correct. What was the problem? Now remember, this is from the old days.
How old? I mean, we're talking just a few decades, not
exactly.
Not 100 years
ago. No, just a few decades ago.
Okay.
I'll give you a hint. When cars were big.
Yeah.
Big.
I got it.
You got it?
I got
you
it.
With me? Mm-hmm. Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or on the back of an original oil-on-canvas Pablo Picasso, complete with authenticating documents, and send it to...
We haven't been getting any
no,
of this
No, the
stuff.
Carpathian Elm Burl dining room set didn't...
Never arrived.
Never showed.
Yeah.
Oh, Berman says that's what you think. Anyway, if you want, send all that to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or you can email your answer from cartalk.com. If you'd like to call us, as always, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Ivan from Manitou Springs, Colorado.
Hi, Ivan. Manitou Springs, huh?
Manitou Springs, yep.
What part of the state is this in?
It's by Colorado Springs.
Oh, okay.
All the springs are there, this... Manitou Springs,
Bed
Colorado Springs,
right.
Springsfield. So, Ivan, what's up, kid?
I have an epic tire saga for you.
Excellent.
All started about 18 months ago when I bought a 1988 Isuzu Trooper.
Mm-hmm.
When I bought it, it had four, you know, totally bald, sketchy tires on it, all sort of different makes and whatever. So I thought, I've got to get new tires.
Yeah.
9 months later, I did.
So you drove around on the baldies for 9 months.
Absolutely.
Good.
Including one time when I was rescued from a snowbank by a team of Mennonites with a Dodge Ram. So I bought these four Pirelli Scorpion tires, these sort of big, mm-hmm. knobby, manly, all-terrain kind of tires.
Right.
And a week after I bought these four tires, one of them was flat.
Really?
I took it down to the tire shop, and they told me that there were these circular abrasions on the inside of the tire that had like sort of torn out the sidewall. And they told me that I'd hit something. And I don't remember hitting anything, but I said, okay, bought a new tire. This was a tire on the left side of the back, driver's side back.
Yeah.
But a week later, the right side in the back was flat. So I put the spare on it. I'm driving down to the tire place. My spare goes flat.
Mm.
I bring in the tire to them. They tell me the same story. They say that there's these mysterious abrasions on the inside. And they suggest that maybe I'd hit some kind of like corrugated siding or something like that.
And they say that you hit something with the inner face of the tire, and you bought that?
Yeah. I bought it with some,
I mean, like,
you know.
Like what?
Well, I mean, if you were driving over unimproved roads, you could be hitting boulders and such. You close to Boulder, Colorado?
No. All
right.
No, this is pretty much my commute to school and back. I'm not doing much off-roading these days.
Yeah, so this is the same problem as the other tire.
Right.
And the spare, which is not a Pirelli Scorpion.
Exactly. The spare was the best of the, you know, god-awful bald tires, the original four. So I didn't worry too much about that one.
But they didn't see any similar markings on the non-Pirelli tire.
To be honest, I don't remember that part. I was kind of indignant.
But that could have blown for a different reason.
It could have.
Yeah, I mean,
will you accept that?
Well, I would, except that 2 weeks later, the third tire went down. Also in the back. Also one of these tires that was a replacement for one of the tires that had gone down before.
Yeah.
So it was only about a week and a half, 2 weeks old. But here are the clues that I have as to this. And the tire people think I'm crazy. They think I just...
Well, we're siding with them, too.
We're slowly adopting that same philosophy ourselves. But
it's in any case, it's always been in the back. And all the tires, except this spare, because I never got that one checked out, have these circular
abrasions.
It looks like somebody took a like a drill with a buffer on it and kind of went around the tire.
Are they circular or is the circle not complete?
The circle is not complete.
Ha!
Ooh.
What a question!
Yeah.
Great question, huh?
Great.
If only.
If only you had a reason for asking it.
There's one other thing I should probably mention, which I didn't want to, and that's that these tires are slightly
wider,
slightly larger,
Larger than the ones that really belong on the truck.
Right. Not hugely larger, but
it doesn't take much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somehow these tires, the inner wall of these tires is coming in contact with something. I don't know what that is. Either the inner fender, the springs. It's maybe a dynamic situation where it happens when you corner, when the thing is loaded with cargo or people.
Or you hit a bump.
Or some such thing is causing something. If you look, you will see something, if you take the tire off, that the tire is hitting. And it's the tire's improper size that is causing the problem.
I'm surprised that the tire guys
didn't notice this.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because they sold you these tires because they didn't have the right size. And they said, we got P289.5, but they'll fit. And it turns out that they often do, but sometimes they don't. And if there's not much clearance allowed in the original design, then it's possible for the tire to come in contact with part of the suspension or part of the body, and that scores away some of the rubber and eventually causes the tire to fail.
Okay. And unfortunately, they're going to have to give you four new tires.
Well, the ones in the back and the front may be all right if you don't ever rotate them, but I think you really want the four properly sized tires.
I would
tires.
Like them to be all the same.
Would you?
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
I mean, I did have a long conversation with the tire guys, and they assured me, oh, no problem. We put these on. You know, it's not going to be an issue.
Well, interestingly, the only thing that bothers me, and I hesitated to bring this up.
Yeah.
I hesitated.
And I have a question for you, too, but go ahead. We're not through with you, Ivan.
I didn't think so.
Is the unusual behavior of the spare.
Well, let me describe the spare to you. The spare was on its last legs. I mean, I really should have probably bought five tires, but I...
And the spare did not have the circular...
Well, he doesn't know.
I don't know. I really don't know.
I'm hoping not.
I was so... covered in oil and hefting my tire iron, and I just sort of stomped in there and said, fix it. So I'm not sure.
And you must have been teed off by that point, huh?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, there are two other things, questionable things. One is, it's unusual for a tire which rubs against something to go flat.
Huh.
I mean, when they fixed the flat, what did they do?
They said they were able to patch it from the inside.
They patched the sidewall?
They patched the sidewall? You can't do that.
I don't know.
I don't know either. So I'm confused about that.
Okay.
And the second thing I'm confused about is why my brother asked the question about whether the circle was complete.
Sounded so good.
I thought you had something there.
No, because I do have something, but it...
Too esoteric to even discuss. Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah. Ivan, thanks for calling. Good luck to you.
I appreciate it.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Liz from Amesbury.
Amesbury, Liz. Massachusetts?
It's true.
Wait. This is the second call we've had from Massachusetts. Well, I didn't think anyone in Massachusetts listened to us.
Well, I'm not really from Massachusetts.
Oh, okay.
You didn't sound it. What's going on, Liz?
Well, I kind of have a relationship / genetic / behavior problem.
Wow. I have a doctorate in all three of these.
Yes. In fact, my brother used to practice animal husbandry until they caught him at it. Anyway.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, so I come from a long line of backseat drivers.
Ah, yes.
And so I'm genetically...
predisposed to...
Exactly. And yet I hate it. Like, I absolutely hate it when my mother does it to me.
Uh-huh.
Well, my husband is just a wonderful man.
Except for what?
Except you're driving him crazy?
He has no sense of direction.
Uh-huh.
So when we're in the car, I'm supposed to pay attention to where we're going... But when we miss an exit and I say, get the exit, then I get in trouble because I'm backseat driving.
Yeah.
And the other day, he told me I was as bad as my mother.
Oh! How about your cooking? Is that as bad as hers, too?
And that, you know, I realized something had to change, but I don't know what to do. So I figured I'd call you guys.
Ah. Well, Liz, you called the right guys.
How do you figure? How do you figure that?
Well, interesting. My son Andrew, who's 23 years old, has resorted to becoming a backseat driver.
No kidding.
But from the front seat, of course. So we'll be going someplace together, and he'll say, you know, there's a red light up ahead. And, your turn's coming up.
Oh, that's because he thinks you're getting senile.
Well,
I've gotten senile.
He must have had some evidence to support that.
Yeah.
And anyway, I told him that from now on, whenever I was going to go anyplace,
you
that
were
I would
put
stop
duct
and
tape on
no,
his mouth.
I'm going to stop and pick him up because it's a miracle that I've been able to find my way around.
Oh yeah, that's
without
right.
him.
Well, you know, that's what he says because in truth, he's a really good driver.
He just doesn't know where the hell he's going.
Except in Boston, like it's really bizarre because anywhere else that's logical. He doesn't know north from south, yet we get into Boston where none of the streets are named and it's all cow paths.
And they don't go north and south or east and west.
And he knows exactly where he is.
He does.
Because he doesn't have to rely on the signs because the signage in Boston has been put up by idiots.
I agree.
The sign is only there if you already know where you're going.
Well, anyway, Liz.
Not that I'm critical.
No, I don't. No.
I'm just fed up.
Are you wearing the right size underwear today, or are you wearing those extra smalls again? I warned you about that. You know what he needs? He needs a navigation system.
Navigation system?
Christmas is coming, and this would be the perfect time.
You can buy one that you just stick in the car.
I have in my car a Magellan navigation thing, and it sticks on the windshield, and I can move it from car to car. And you tell it where you want to go, and it tells you where to go.
Okay, but then how does that help me from not...
You won't have to say a word to keep your mouth shut.
Right, but how did you do that?
Because duct tape, because
the navigation thing speaks to you.
Sure, it says take the next right turn, dummy.
Right, and what it doesn't do is get angry.
No,
and it doesn't get snippy, like you might do.
I would never do that.
No. Or condescending.
Yeah.
It doesn't do any of those things. It just speaks.
And it doesn't do any of this.
And it doesn't say, why don't you pull over and ask somebody, stupid?
Hey, that would be good. If Magellan's going to have a little, you miss a turn, and it goes, oh, geez.
What do you think? This is the third time you've missed it. It would be really funny if they could program that in. But anyway, if he had one of these things, then you could just sit back and know that you would get to your destination, and you and he could talk about things. You know, that
other things
other than the fact he doesn't know where he's going.
I like it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good luck.
So if you want to buy this thing, just send $150 to my brother, care of the station.
And I'll sell you mine.
I'll sell you his.
Not in your life.
Because his son is telling him where to go.
See you, Liz.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David, the Calves of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blooper, Fenolosa. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Pritchard. Our engineer is John Carton Parati. Our interns are Ariel Niedermeyer and Kira McKnight. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the Abilene, Ovaltine, Jelly Bean, Grenadine, canned sardine, salad green, Listerine, and hot caffeine lunch canteen is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our personal makeup artist is Bud Tugley. Our personal hygiene advisor from the Tokyo office is Oteka Shower. Our staff bicycle tester is Maya Sertz. Our press secretary is Don B. Zanozzi. Our Desi Arnaz biographer is Ike Arumba, you get it?
Ike Arumba.
Our appointment secretary is Amadeus O'Early. Our anger... Oh, no, she's not on the staff yet. Our Russian chauffeur is Peekoff and Dropoff. Our directors of quality control are Les Thomas and Noma Raymond. And the head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the glassy-eyed shoppers in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and don't drive like my brother.
And don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1148, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, Cars from the Silver Screen.
Yeah, you know, what's your favorite movie car ever?
Me, I would say Dustin Hoffman's Alfa Romeo from The Graduate.
No, you just had the hearts of Mrs. Robinson. Well, I guessed wrong. I thought you were going to pick the 76 AMC Pacer from Wayne's World.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Tempting, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, if any of you folks out there would like to join the discussion about your favorite cars featured in movies, it's happening right now in the community forums at cartalk.com. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the NPR electrician makes a mental note to leave some wiring exposed in our studio whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.